It's Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, 5 o'clock hour. You heard it, ESPN Las Vegas. Steve Cofield, Jeff Parles, STN Book adjacent to our set here. We're back tomorrow, Throw the Flag Show. That's 9 to 11. We'll get you into all of the bowl games tomorrow. 7 bowl games starting at 8 a.m. You can come by and get breakfast, watch the games. On the breakfast menu, about 6-7 items, including the breakfast meat lovers quesadilla and the chorizo con papas breakfast bowl. You get my chicken tenders. They're not mine, but the what are they? Southpaw tenders, right? I got those last week. They're delicious. So we got a conversation coming up with Matt Rhule, Nebraska head coach. Nebraska's taking on Utah. That game has a little different angle. I could not even begin to guess. First of all, what the hell is going to happen in the game for Utah? Kyle Whittingham's going to coach?
No. Whittingham's.
Oh, I didn't see that announced.
From what I read, and I don't know if it's confirmed yet, that Whittingham was going to inform the team later this afternoon. That has probably already happened, I would imagine. And he will be on a plane to Florida for Michigan's bowl game against Texas.
Fill in people on what happened, because I jumped ahead. The lead here is, well, he took the Michigan job.
Yep.
Kyle Whittingham, the Utah coach. He's done. He's retiring. Right off into the sunset. Right to Ann Arbor.
Yeah, right to Ann Arbor.
Again, five-year deal.
Five-year deal. He'll be 70 when it's over. So, look, I could
Are we having a debate? Was it you and I? I thought we were having a debate that you said he kind of looked like he was worn out towards the end of the season. Was that you?
I didn't say that.
Man, no. he looks great.
No, I know. I just said that I think earlier in the show, I said I think he's lost his fastball a little bit in comparison to what he was at his peak. But Michigan just needs an adult in the room for what's transpired there over the even when they were winning the title. Just you need to clean things up there in Ann Arbor, and he seems like the perfect guy in order to do that. And also, I think we stumbled on it earlier, where all that private equity that Utah is getting, and Michigan and USC were the two teams in the Big Ten that really just put the kibosh on the private equity deal with the league. It's might have been something else that Whittingham. Who knows? We don't know. It's crazy, and honestly, to think about.
This is a wild situation. It's wild that Utah wanted him out, and now Michigan has hired him. Man, this is crazy. And the portal's coming up on January 2nd. Other breaking news today is that Anthony Calandria, the starting quarterback for UNLV, has now informed who is it, Pete Thamel, or his agents had. He's got a couple agents working with him. And they put out the news that he is going into the portal. I don't think that completely slams the door, but it probably does on his career with the Rebels. I would assume he's had multiple offers out there. I'll read you I think this is in relation, and if not, it certainly applies. I think it's in relation to Anthony Calandria, a tweet. There are NIL, quote, agents going after guys who have announced they're staying at their current school so that they can get themselves an inflated commission. Okay. This needs to be regulated, and I think it's okay to bring back shaming. For taking advantage of 18 to 22-year-olds. I mean, is Anthony Calandria, if he cashes in a million and a half, with a Power 4 school, is someone being taken advantage of? And by the way, the schools aren't doing anything wrong either. This is no different than recruiting 18-year-olds, right? Verbals mean, I almost cursed, verbals mean jack squat. Nothing. Right? They don't mean a damn thing.
They haven't meant anything in a long time. So
situations change in the portal where, like you were saying earlier, coaches may be informed that they're really on the hot seat, or coaches may be informed that, hey, guess what? We got an extra million in an NIL budget for you, so you may want to, spend a little more on a quarterback, and these are the guys who are available. So let's go.
There are so many new coaches in the Big Ten this year where different guys are going to want different rosters than they inherited. And I mean, look, in the SEC too, I mean, just look, like, there are so many different new coaches at the top of college football now, and unfortunately for UNLV and everyone else in the Mountain West and the new Pac-12 and the Sun Belt and all the group of six, is just, this is the way it is, this is the way it's going to be. until there is some sort of regulation of, hey, you got to take, you got to stay in the same spot for 2 years or whatever it happens to end up being.
This show is not prone to panic. We give some hot takes, but we're not hot take hot shots. Frankly, the show probably sucks because of that. We probably should be melting down over Calandria. I'm going to say this in sort of a melting down area, right?
Okay.
This is a big loss.
Oh, yeah.
I think Rebel fans are confident that UNLV will be fine because they have been fine, right? 3 years ago, they had Doug Brumfield, who started. Jade Maiava came off the bench and was really good and, frankly, saved Ricky White's career.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the flip side is Ricky White really helped Jade Maiava, right? Mm-hmm. But that brought Ricky White to life. Last year, they went with Matt Sluka. He lost it 3 games in. The backup comes in. It works out. Just like the year before, it worked out. Just like last year, Alex Orji and Anthony Calandria in a battle in fall. Calandria had the lead, you know, coming out of the spring, but they pick Calandria. Orji gets hurt. It works out.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it always works out. And the quarterback is the most volatile position on the team. And I can't point out enough that a lot of times around the country when people are like, this didn't work out with this coach, you got to get rid of him, right? I mean, these, like, highfalutin hires. People were really excited. The one I think of often is Mike Norvell. He just has not gotten the quarterback right.
No.
And it has killed him. And it could really make a difference on a team of 3 or 4 wins. That's how important the position is. And for UNLV, do I think Mullen will have very interested parties out there to play quarterback for him? Yes. Do they get it right? I don't know. Do they pick the right guy? I don't know.
Oh, I mean, that goes for every level of college football now when you're changing quarterbacks on a year-to-year basis. And that's, unfortunately, again, for being not in the power conference, and you know what? This is happening to power conference schools too, so it shouldn't be just the G6. So with the Pac-12 coming back, it is truly turning into a year-to-year sport, as close to the NFL as it's ever been because of this constant turnover at this point. I mean, look, I mean, Indiana's going to have a third quarterback in 3 years when Mendoza goes pro.
Yep.
Oregon's going to have a third quarterback or fourth quarterback in 4 years after that. So
what if Auburn had gotten Mendoza and not Indiana?
Yeah,
right?
Who knows?
I'm looking at Clark Lee because I know he signed an extension. Vanderbilt doesn't have to announce what the extension is, but Clark Lee must be like, damn, this money's good. Thanks, Diego.
Yeah.
Diego Pavia was committed to Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, those folks are ready to put their head through a freaking wall over that one.
Yep. And Pavia, like you said, he saved Clark Lee's job. Saved his job and got him handsomely paid. And now Vanderbilt has a positive connotation in football for the first time ever.
I already know what the buildup for next year is going to be that with UNLV, that the Mountain West sucks compared to what it's been. I don't believe that. I think it's going to be fine. But the pressure will be on UNLV to win 10, 11 games. And
whoever that quarterback is going to have to perform.
Yep. And I couldn't tell you what their plan is right now. I think Alex Orji has much interest in coming back, I think. It certainly changes now, right, that Calandria is gone. They have young prospects. I don't know in the building if they're like, yep, that's one of our guys. Or
we'll see.
The way it is now, it is crazy. You almost can't get excited as a fan over your quarterback room and having young prospects. Because, one, you don't know when the hell the coach is going to say they're ready. Because it is a year-to-year deal. There is no, hey, we're breaking in a new quarterback. Sorry, folks, expect 7 wins this year. What? Go to the portal. Get someone.
Yeah.
You got to get old. Okay.
Well, and you know what? A part of the Whittingham hire at Michigan we actually didn't talk about yet. Surprise, I don't know we're going to stay. Like, we're talking about the University of Michigan, one of the best programs historically in the history of college football.
Yeah.
And they're changing the coach, and Bryce Underwood may go to LSU.
Yep.
Like, and that wouldn't shock anyone if that happens.
Well, I don't know what the deal is with the true freshman quarterback who was at Utah, but I don't know if he's tight with the Utah staff or with Whittingham.
I don't know. I think if I'm Whittingham, I'm trying to bring the OC over, because that offense with they when they were running it, and Underwood's strength is his legs more so than his arm right now. Yeah. Boy, you could have a pretty darn good offense if you were putting up 39 points a game with Dampierre. Imagine what you can do with Underwood.
They got Underwood in large part because of Larry Ellison's money, so it's not like, you know.
No, the money's not going anywhere.
Not like Sharon Moore was paying him, you know. Yeah. Oh, Coach Moore's gone, no money. The money's still there.
Honestly, Underwood might actually be okay with a new change in regime, because they didn't unleash him. They didn't unleash him at all last year. Chip Lindsey's at Missouri now, and obviously we know what happened to Moore.
So another one of the tweets I was referencing about a half an hour ago just, you know, popped open the Twitter machine. I was like, okay, it's a couple of UNLV-related items. Jet Thomas, running back who is coming back, right? I think. Jet Thomas, back. UNLV, he's coming back, we think. I guess people are tweeting at him like, you know, hey, what the hell's going on here? He said, respectfully, no football questions right now. I'm off the clock and with family. I appreciate y'all. Uh-oh. No, I'm kidding. That doesn't mean anything. It's just, you know, I don't feel like reacting to this. He might be surprised by it. He might not be surprised at all by it. But Jet Thomas, for folks who don't know, is the would be a fourth-year running back for the Rebels, who just went over 1,200 yards combined yardage, another double-digit touchdown year. So the hope was a week ago that they were going to have their quarterback and running back, but we'll see.
The
fluid situation.
Be an interesting offseason. Again, this is just the nature of the beast when you're not enough. And you know what? Even for power conference teams, this is the nature of the beast. Yep. Until there's some sort of regulation with all this, this is what it's going to be.
We played a post-game conversation I had with Dan Mullen in hour one. He mentioned there's a lot of decisions that need to be made. He also, I'm trying to think of how he put it. I think he mentioned something like, he said, we'll have a lot of guys coming back, but the operation will be different. Things will be run differently.
Okay.
Now, when I hear things will be run differently, that to me is an overall, hey, the program, and that refers more to coaching. So they will have changes with the position coaches. For sure. That'll be coming out soon. And I don't know what's going to happen with the DC, but it is confirmed that Mike Scheer, the old DC who went to Purdue with Odom, was back around the team.
Interesting.
I don't know if that means he's the defensive coordinator. I don't know if that means he's hired, but he's back around. He was back around the team. He was at the team hotel. So we'll see what happens there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which then would open up things for, you know what, the craziest thing now in college football are the returns back to a school. The running back for Ohio rushed for 1,250 yards this year, and I think had like 15 touchdowns. Last year he played at Minnesota. The 3 years prior to that, he was at Ohio. He went to Minnesota, was like, eh, sucks. Let me go back to Ohio. So there were some guys who went from UNLV to Purdue, like a hometown guy in Charles Correa.
Maybe.
If I remember at the time, he was like, hey, I really like my linebacker coach, Mike Scheer. So we'll see what happens with that one. Something else to follow up on. The Purdue situation got really weird early on here in the offseason. They fired the offensive line coach, Vance Weiss, who was at UNLV, went to Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of O-linemen went with him because they like Weiss. They like Odom, too. But Weiss is out. Scheer, the way it was put, was he's leaving the program because he's looking at other opportunities. There are whispers at Purdue that it's a weird situation there. Like, they might have I say things for a reason, and I hope people, you know, they absorb it. Not that my word is any sort of gospel, but when I reference Michigan and good coaches leaving other schools, I will often say, well, you know, coaches don't leave schools where they have equity. And the other thing I always say is they have cooperation from the top down. If the people above you don't get it, that can really screw up your situation. I'm not saying that's Purdue, but it might be Purdue.
It's possible. Again, when Odom took that job, I didn't think it made, and again, like, You obviously got to know Barry very well over his 2 years here at Cofield. I know Barry very well from his time in Missouri. That was when I was still working in media in Columbia. That move, even though I know he had a want to move back to that region of the country, still shocked me at the time.
Can I tell you what I think happened? That maybe he didn't see everything that was coming in terms of UNLV funding. Now, I'm not saying they got $20 million for NIL, but they got money. And I don't know that he saw that they were going to have money. I think he was like, hey, this is about as good as it's going to get. I'm getting the hell out of here. And I got, you know, upwards of $36 million over 6 years. Let me go for that. It seems like a pretty good situation. And he could have lasted here one more year. I don't know who would have played quarterback for him. I don't know what would have happened. He had a good core coming back. I don't think he saw the funding that was coming. And he probably could have had a good year and then moved on to a lot of different places with like an 8 or 9 win season.
Well, if he went eight,
if he
went
what Mullen did,
if he went 8-4 or 9-3, he would have got the Oklahoma State job.
Possibly.
I feel pretty good about that, honestly.
Coming up, all these coaches, I mean, this is all they got to worry about now is money, 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 money. Well, there's a bowl season still to be played here, and Matt Rhule is trying to get some good momentum going towards next year. He's got a freshman quarterback. We'll find out more about the freshman quarterback who's in there for Dylan Raiola as Matt Rhule is up next.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Las Vegas Bowl coming up right here in town, 12:30 start. New Year's Eve, you can get your tickets at lvbowl.com, lvbowl.com. Kyle Whittingham and the Utah Utes are going to be taking on Nebraska. Matt Rhule is the head coach of the Huskers. I had a chance to sit down with Coach Rhule and started off the convo just talking about the bowl game starting to lose some steam, but they're still very, very special for some programs, right?
No, they're amazingly special. I think they're great for young people and their experiences. I think they're great for our fans. I mean, I think the people of Las Vegas are going to see Husker Nation descend and what that actually means. I think it's a pretty special deal. You know, I was out there for the Bud Crawford fight, and when I walked out of Allegiant, I got stopped every 10 feet by someone from Nebraska that was there to root for Bud. So I think it's really special for our fan base, special for our players. And, you know, I think Kirby Smart said it really well the other day. He was talking about the college football playoff and how they believe that December is a time that you develop. And so we're developing our team for next year, but we're excited for the opportunity to play a great Utah team.
By the way, what do you think of Allegiant Stadium as a boxing venue?
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. It was, you know, it had been my first time being there. When I was in the NFL, I never had a chance to go to Allegiant. And I was just, blown away with, you know, the sight lines and the experience, but also just the ease of getting in and out. It was unbelievably convenient. So you can tell that you guys know how to do hospitality at a high level.
Can I get your impression on Vegas as a sports city? Because we know you had the podcast before the season, the Big Ten media day, and maybe it got misconstrued what you were saying about college sports in Vegas.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I was mad that I always feel like we're acquiescing to Oregon and USC and UCLA. You know, the Big Ten meetings, you know, went to California, and you know, people on the East Coast flying. So I love Las Vegas. I mean, we my wife and I came, we saw, you know, we're friends with Kenny Chesney. We came to the Sphere. We came to see Bud. I think it's one of the elite sports cities in the country. And so, you know, when that came out, I immediately said, man, why'd I say it like that? You know, I was more commenting on the Big Ten because, you know, we're East Coast to West Coast. And if every event's on the, you know, kind of on the West Coast, you know, it's not fair to the guys at Penn State and Rutgers. And I was only talking about that. I think our basketball team had an amazing run last year at the Crown, and they're sitting right now here as one of the, you know, as an undefeated team in the top 25, maybe even top 10. And that all started last year in Vegas. And so we can't wait to get there. We think it's going to be an amazing springboard, but I apologize for those comments. You know, my Italian upbringing, every once in a while, I just kind of say what I think right off the bat, but that had nothing to do with the city itself. It just, you know, had to do with the Big Ten.
Here with us. It turns out that Dan Mullen is also buddies with Kenny Chesney. He must be a really big sports fan, huh?
Yeah, well, yes, he definitely is. And so Julie and I hung out with Dan and his wife that night, and actually PJ Fleck was there. So one of the great things about Kenny Chesney is, you know, like when I was in Carolina, he came there, and he usually comes in a couple days early and works out at the facility and came here to Lincoln. So he loves sports and loves coaches.
So tell me what the game is going to look like for you at quarterback. Obviously, Raiola's moving on. Your freshman quarterback's had experience. I know he got a little dinged up. Where is he right now? What are you looking for in this game?
Yeah, TJ Latif, you know, we went out to the West Coast. His first start at UCLA, he played a great game. I think he's a special young talent. And, you know, he pulled his hamstring against Iowa, you know, continued to play. He's healthy now, so you know, we're excited to see him. You know, he's a true dual-threat quarterback. You know, can be explosive down the field, can be explosive with his legs, and so we're glad to have him back.
In this current era of college football, can you be patient? Do you have to look at the quarterback position differently if you don't have a junior or senior who's coming back because of the portal and the opportunities in the portal?
You know, I think it depends on the player that you have. I mean, you'd love to develop somebody for 3 or 4 years. And honestly, I think most times that's what's best for the player. But, you know, there's so much mobility and portability. I think you always have to be looking for who's out there, you know, who can upgrade your team, who can fill those spots, because you never know when you're going to keep a player. So, you know, we want to still, you know, our goal is whoever's on our team, we want to develop them. And if they decide to leave, they decide to leave them. But, you know, we think TJ's a really special young player. And so we signed him, we had plans for him, and it just came a little bit earlier than, you know, we all expected.
LVBowl.com is where you can get the tickets. It's a 12:30 start for the Las Vegas Bowl on New Year's Eve. Special spot there on New Year's Eve. Again, 12:30 starts. You go out to the game, and then you can go out and do all that you want around Las Vegas. I know your running back, Emmett Johnson, is going into the NFL. So how's the running back room look going into this one?
You know, we have a really young, dynamic group. Isaiah Mosey, Makai Nelson, two guys entering the year. We thought we'd be a tailback by committee. And just Emmett got hot, and, you know, he never got banged up. He never took a big hit. You know, we're in the Big Ten. It's, you know, it's frozen turf sometimes, cold days, and he just got through the whole year. But those guys have been waiting their turn, and so we expect them to play really well. We have a big, powerful offensive line, but I think you'll see Isaiah Mosey, Makai Nelson, Quentin Ives. I think you'll see some dynamic young talent that we think are going to be great players in the Big Ten.
When you think about Kyle Whittingham on the other side, what do you think of in terms of football philosophy and style?
Well, I have the utmost respect for him, first of all. And great defense, run the football at a high level. What they've done with, you know, kind of changing their offense and kind of going to almost a spread option, kind of harkening back to the, you know, the old Utah Urban Meyer days. It's really, really scary to watch, to be quite honest with you. I mean, they've run through everybody except for Texas Tech. And so, but I think that's, you know, Coach Whittingham, he has an identity. He has a philosophy. They're going to be physical. They're going to beat you up on defense and run the ball on offense. And so, you know, our Achilles heel all year has been our run defense. So we've had to do a lot of work to try to get ready for this game.
What's some of the work you've done? I know covering UNLV football, that, you know, they had trouble on defense, and a lot of the run problems were just simply assignment football, you know, gap integrity. It's just about the smarts on the field. For you guys, what has it been?
Well, we made a philosophical change. You know, we changed coordinators. I went back to Snow, who was in a sort of a senior associate position, and he's coordinating this game. And you know, I think we were kind of caught all year in between, like, you know, kind of an identity of who do we want to be? Are we, you know, are we three down? Are we four down? And we've just kind of settled in and just said, hey, you know what? We're going to be pretty simple. We're going to make sure our guys know what they're doing. And one of the great things about Phil Snow is he demands effort. He demands technique. And so, you know, we're not going to out-scheme Utah in this game, but we also don't want to out-scheme ourselves. We're just going to try to play fundamental football and hope to get off blocks and tackle at a high level.
There is Matt Rhule. Talked to him a couple days ago. That was before Kyle Whittingham was headed off to Michigan. So Whittingham probably not coaching this game. So I asked him about Kyle Whittingham identity team. It's going to be, you know, same identity. Not going to change everything in, you know, whatever it is, 6 days here, 5 days. 5 days, right? Yeah, 5 days, New Year's Eve. So Matt Rhule coming to town. He gave a good answer on the whole Vegas thing. He got caught up doing a podcast and was more unhappy about the Big Ten kind of bending over backwards for multiple events for Oregon and Washington and UCLA and USC. And as I explained a couple of times, the Midwest and Northeast turnout for the media sucked here in Vegas, so the event didn't go as well as I'm sure a lot of coaches were hoping for. You know, why do a media day if there's not going to be a big turnout? Coming back, we'll go back to the betting side of things and get you ready for Week 17 in the NFL, also the bowl games, and a little look ahead for the CFP, which is coming up on New Year's Eve and on New Year's Day, as Scott Seidenberg from Better Day Podcast and 1230 Visa in the Game will join us.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Mm-hmm.
back here on this Friday. Scott Seidenberg, Better Day Podcast, and VSiN 1230 The Game is up with us. Scott, before we look at CFP next week, I just wanted to get your reaction to what happened in the first go-around with the two blowouts and then Texas A&M and Miami. Any big thoughts moving forward in terms of the way you're going to handicap the quarterfinals?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway from the first round of the college football playoff was that Miami's defense is legit, and Miami should be getting a little bit more respect when it comes to their ability to take on a team like Ohio State. The spread might be a little bit too high for that game. And then so much is going to be talked about Alabama and how they're getting so many points against Indiana, and all the SEC truthers are going to come out and say, you can't give this team this many points. Alabama did what Alabama has usually done all season, which is find ways to win football games where they should have lost. I think Indiana's the right side in this game. I'm sure we're going to talk about it as we get closer, but I think it'll be interesting to see if the public comes in more on Alabama that they already have, given the SEC bias that we see sometimes here in college football.
Scott Seidenberg's up on ESPN Las Vegas. Is Oregon the right favorite against Texas Tech?
No, I think Texas Tech is a national championship contender. Their defense is absolutely legit. It's the best defensive front in the country. I personally have two tickets that I placed before the college football playoff started, which was Georgia to win the national championship and Texas Tech to win the national championship. I think those are the two most complete teams right now. I give a lot of credit for what Oregon's done all season. I'm not going to downgrade them for allowing so many points late to James Madison, but you can't ignore it either, right? They gave up, and it wasn't even just those fourth quarter points. Like, look at the yardage that they gave up in the first half to James Madison. It has to be a little bit concerning. And Texas Tech's defense is just a different animal. Their one loss was without their starting quarterback this season, so they're undefeated with Baron Morton starting. And I think that this is a team that continues to roll into the final.
There are seven games tomorrow, if I have the count right, on December 27th. I don't know how aggressive you've been on the bowl games, but do you have anything you really like tomorrow?
Well, the bowl games have been terrible. There's no other way around it, okay? I'm just going to come out and say it. They have been terrible. And what I've realized more often after I'm watching these games is that these coaches don't care about these bowl games. Now, there's exceptions, right? The Hawaii Bowl was incredible. And that was my biggest investment in bowl season this year, was on that Hawaii Bowl, both on Hawaii money line, thankfully, lucky win, and also on the over in that game. Because you knew going into that game, you had two coaches that cared about that game. You had two coaches that understood and respected that game in Nick Rolovich and Timmy Chang. So you knew what you were going to get. These other games, it's more obvious, Steve, that the coaches are taking this month off between the regular season and the bowl game, not to prepare for their bowl game, but to work with their roster to figure out what they're going to have on their depth chart for next season. It's three extra weeks of practice time that they don't normally have with this roster. So you can tell me that the starters are going to play in their bowl games. That's great. They're probably just going through walkthroughs during the week or two leading up to the game, whereas the coaching staff is working with the rest of the players to just try and get a head start on next year's roster. You cover UNLV, Steve. You watch every single game. I watch every single UNLV game this season. You cannot tell me that UNLV spent 3 weeks preparing for their bowl game with Anthony Calandry at quarterback and Jet Thomas at running back, a team that scores over 40 points per game, to only score one touchdown late in the fourth quarter against a MAC team in Ohio. That just proved to me that they did not prepare for that bowl game or care about that bowl game, and they spent the time working with the players that will be on this roster next season. That's just one small example, but it's very difficult now to handicap these bowl games unless you truly know that the coaches and the players are playing for this exact game. That's why I gravitate toward service academies. You know what you're going to get from service academies in bowl games. So Army against UConn, I love Army. Now, you're getting taxed on the spread. It has moved significantly. Army's now a touchdown favorite, if not more, in some spots. But you know that the Army team is preparing for this game because they're not looking ahead for their roster next year. They're not looking ahead to try and figure out who they're going to get in the transfer portal or NIL, right? They're preparing to coach this game and play in this game. So if I was to pick a team on this big schedule of bowl games, it's Army right now I have the most confidence in over anybody else, because I have no idea what we're getting from these other teams.
Scott Seidenberg on ESPN Las Vegas. Saturday NFL, Chargers are one against the Texans in the early game. What do you think?
Texans should keep this one really, really close. They're a great teaser leg if they were at 1.5 and you can get them up to 7.5, depending on your teaser pricing and your price tolerance, obviously. But I do think Houston's live in this game. They're still playing for a division title, and I think that their defense, which has been the best unit in the entire NFL, can get after the quarterback, because the one thing that the Chargers have going against them is their offensive line is absolutely terrible. They cannot protect Justin Herbert. They allow a high pressure rate. Herbert's getting hit. He's getting sacked. He has been Superman, though, and he has willed his team to victories here, and they're getting a good running component now with Omarion Hampton back. They lose Kamari Vidal to an injury, but Hampton's back now as the lead running back. I just trust the Houston defense more, and we know that the Chargers don't have any type of home field advantage in that stadium. So I'm going to go with the Texans to win this game, which would then eliminate the Indianapolis Colts from postseason contention on Sunday. So I think there's correlated plays here when it comes to the Saturday games into the Sunday games in the NFL.
Let's talk Packers and Ravens. Packers are up to 4.5.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be Tyler Huntley at quarterback, and that's the right move. Packers still have an outside shot at the division because the Bears' final two games are pretty difficult, so there's still an outside shot that they can get the NFC North. But regardless, they're a much better, more complete team here right now than the Baltimore Ravens. This is a Ravens team that is playing out the strings. Even if they do win this game, they're going to need the Browns to upset the Steelers and then beat the Steelers in Week 18 in order to make the playoffs. It's just not going to happen. Even with a healthy Lamar Jackson, which is really not a thing because he should have never came back from his hamstring injury when he did. He's been a shell of himself. He has no explosiveness. He's not running the football. There's too many problems going on right now with this Baltimore Ravens team. Zay Flowers is the only player that Lamar seems to be connecting with, and Tyler Huntley now taking over at quarterback. I have no confidence in them going into Lambeau and winning a football game against this Packers team, who even without Micah Parsons, their defense has still been pretty good. Their pass rush still has been pretty decent. So I think this is a good get right spot. Even if it's not Jordan Love, I do trust Malik Willis and what LaFleur has done with Willis at quarterback specifically. So I think the Packers win this game. And that, again, brings me to another correlation. Packers win this game, it eliminates the Ravens from postseason contention. The Steelers now have nothing to play for. It wouldn't surprise me if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play the entirety of the game on Sunday against Cleveland. So if you're looking for a correlated parlay, it would be parlaying the Packers on Saturday with the Browns on Sunday against the Steelers.
Scott Seidenberg's with us, ESPN Las Vegas. So on these correlated plays, what do we do if we wait? Or should we wait? Can we play the games by themselves? So let's start with Steelers-Browns. So your guess is, hey, Rodgers may not play if they're in the playoffs. So how do we approach this as a one-off?
Well, you approach this by betting the Browns now at +3. Because what's going to happen is the market is going to adjust significantly. If the Ravens win the game and the Steelers need to win in order to clinch the division, okay, maybe the line goes, 3.5. If it goes off the 3, maybe, or just stays at the 3, because it's probably baked in right now that the Steelers still have something to play for. But if the Ravens are eliminated and Pittsburgh has nothing to play for, the market is going to come in heavily on Cleveland, and this line is going to go down to 2.5. It's going to come off the 3. So you're going to lose the value here if you don't take Cleveland early. And it's not just because maybe Rodgers might not play the full game. They're also without DK Metcalf, who's suspended for the final two games of the season. They have injuries up and down this roster. They're not going to force TJ Watt back early if the game is meaningless. So even though he returned to practice this week, he's likely out once again. So it's just a spot where you want to back Cleveland in a basically their Super Bowl, right? They're home. They're against a division rival. They want to win this game. They want Myles Garrett to get the sack record. So it would be buying in on Cleveland now +3 before those threes disappear once Baltimore loses on Saturday.
What do we want to do in this tank bowl with the Giants and Raiders both needing to lose, and now the Giants, this thing's flipped back and forth. Giants are one against the Raiders.
I love this conversation about tanking, right? We know that players don't tank. Players on the field are going to play hard, right? This is their livelihood. However, organizations can tank. And what I mean by that is they could make certain roster decisions. The Raiders can decide to put Brock Bowers on IR for the final two games of the season because, he's hurt and we don't really need the games. It's okay. So I think that if you're looking at this game from a first overall pick perspective, it's the wrong way to handicap it, right? Because I've heard so many people out there saying, well, the Giants don't care if they get the first overall pick because they have a quarterback. So let's bet the Giants to win this game. Raiders probably win this game, right? Geno Smith looked good last week, and the Raiders offense looked good last week, and the Giants have not in consecutive weeks now. This Giants offense, yes, with Jackson Dart at quarterback, has significantly struggled. And now for them to, you know, come on the road here to Vegas, is it a business trip? Is it a vacation? I know they're going to have a lot of fans in the building, but I don't trust this Giants roster to travel here and put up points. Mike Kafka certainly is coaching to show some things to get a job potentially next year. So, you know, he's not tanking. But I think I was a little bit taken. I got to admit, I was wrong on Geno Smith last week. I was wrong on the Raiders last week. So I think this is a good spot to back the Raiders because nobody wants to back the Raiders. And I think the conversation about tanking is just ridiculous at this point. These are two bad football teams. I'll gladly take the home team in the battle of the bads.
Scott, talk about the Better Day podcast that you're doing.
Yeah, the website component is really the main part here, betterday.com, where I put all my content, research, the exclusive databases, the trench report that I put out every single week. It's all available for you, as well as a daily newsletter, which is the component to my podcast that I do every single day, Monday through Friday, bonus episodes on the weekends as well. So you can find us up on the website, betterday.com. Download the Better Day podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. And you can catch me on VSiN every single weekend on 12:30 The Game.
Why are the Bengals up to 7.5 against the Cardinals?
Because both of these teams stink and everyone's just buying into Joe Burrow and the Bengals offense, I guess. It's so hard when you look at these teams that are playing for nothing. And look at the Christmas games, right? Didn't it kind of show you that when you have these bad teams playing for nothing at the end of the season, it's the home teams that are going to come out and fight hard, and the road teams are just kind of meh, playing out the strings? Like Detroit, that was embarrassing going into Minnesota. But Minnesota fought hard like it was their Super Bowl, right? You saw the home team play well in Kansas City in what might have been Travis Kelce's final home game. And the Broncos just went in there knowing that, yeah, this team's not going to beat us. I mean, the Cowboys and Commanders was a different story, but that's just because of the talent discrepancy and also because Dak Prescott's going for the passing title this year. If you're looking at these matchups, I lean heavily towards these home teams in the final games of the season. And with Cincinnati being home, trying to give their fans at least one final thing to cheer about. I mean, they have two home games left between the Cardinals and the Browns, but I'd be backing the Bengals here at home. I cannot trust Arizona going out of Arizona into cold weather in Cincinnati and putting up a fight here against the Bengals.
Games that mean something for one or both teams. Scott Seidenberg's with us. Seahawks are laying 7 at the Panthers.
Yeah, and well, Carolina can still lose this game and then win the division next week. So it's not like it's a must win for Carolina here. Seattle, meanwhile, like if they have any chances, like it's not in their own hands because the 49ers control their own fate. But Seattle wants to stay in the conversation with a win here. So I would back Seattle not at north of 7. This line is getting too away from us here. I think the defense shows up, though. I know we had a high-scoring game the last time we saw them against the Rams. This feels like a good defensive spot here. We know how good Mike McDonald's been on the road as the head coach of Seattle. It's a low-ish total, around 43. But I don't think that Bryce Young and this Panthers offense puts up a ton of points here against this Seahawks defense. And I could see this being a lower-scoring game between these two teams. Not sure I would lay the 7. It would be Seattle or pass for me, but I do like the under.
How about the Bucs 5.5 at the Dolphins?
I love Tampa Bay in this spot. This is a get-right spot for Tampa as they head into that Week 18 matchup against the Panthers to win the division. Like, you're either going to the playoffs or you're not going to the playoffs. It's been janky. I guess that's the word I'm looking for with the Bucs ever since they got all their players back. And people thought, hey, look at all these weapons, right? You still have Ibuka, who's a tremendous rookie. Evans is there. Godwin's there now. Jalen McMillan's back. Kate Otten's back. Look at all the weapons that Baker Mayfield has to throw to now. They're still trying to figure that out. Still trying to figure out the offense and how it's going to flow with all of these mouths to feed. So I think it didn't look good the past couple of weeks. This is a get-right spot here against the Dolphins defense. Not concerned about any, you know, big bad travel spots or weather spots here in Miami. This is a good game to back Baker Mayfield and the Bucs to get right before the division championship game, which will likely be flexed to Sunday night next week in Week 18.
I'm glad you mentioned get right, because I kind of thought that's what the Eagles had the last two trips out. So I'm not really sure what they proved, that they're back on track, but the Bills are a pick in this situation at home.
Yeah, and this is what's the market telling us here. We've had this conversation before about how the NFC is power rated significantly higher than the AFC, and the Bills might be the highest power rated team in the AFC. And this game, with them being about a one to one and a half point favorite, what is the market telling us? That they're even teams, Buffalo and Philly. So if they played on a neutral field, then you'd see a spread be a pick 'em, which means, like, okay, if Buffalo plays the Rams in the Super Bowl, the Rams are favored. If they play the Eagles, maybe the Eagles might be slight favorites. If they play, you know, whoever out of the NFC, that's just only the Buffalo Bills. What if it's the Broncos? What if it's the Jaguars? What if it's the Texans or Patriots? Whoever comes out of the AFC that's not Buffalo, they're going to be significant dogs in the Super Bowl to whoever comes out of the NFC. It comes down to me to the quarterback here, and Josh Allen has, even though he's not going to win the MVP, he's not in the MVP discussion, but he's playing like an MVP, especially in the second half of games this season. And this is kind of a prove it spot for Buffalo as they get ready to, you know, make a push here in the playoffs. I still have Buffalo going to the Super Bowl, by the way. I think if there's one quarterback that you trust in the AFC, you look it up and down the list of all the playoff teams in the AFC, the one quarterback you trust is Josh Allen. And in these games, like in this game here against the Eagles, you're going to find out why he's the one guy that kind of shows you that you can trust them. This feels like one of these late season spots where it's a playoff preview. Not necessarily because it's the matchup that you're going to see in the playoffs. Obviously, the only time we'd see this is in the Super Bowl. But it's a preview of, it's a measuring stick game of how you can do against a playoff opponent. And it will feel like a playoff atmosphere, and you're going to get a playoff-like performance from Josh Allen. I'm backing the Bills here at home. Philly's defense has been great. I'll give them that. Saquon's been better as of late running the football. They've established that now in the past couple of weeks, but I still think there's a lot of things wrong with this Eagles offense this year. I don't necessarily think that all is right with the play calling, whether it was Nick Sirianni being more involved or Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator, still calling all the plays. But the team that I trust more, the quarterback that I trust more, is Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills.
Fired up for Week 17. We're back tomorrow. Throw the flag. We'll get you ready for all of Week 17, which includes two Saturday games. Bowl slate tomorrow has seven bowl games. That was Scott Seidenberg, Better Day Podcast, and VSiN 1230 The Game, our sister station. We got to close out with your weekend plans, because I'm very jealous. Very jealous. Tonight, I will go gorge. I have a dinner date, not with the SO, but with some friends at a buffet. But you, my friend, especially after the last week or so of me listening to a ton of Christmas music, and I was like, you know, the Backstreet Boys do a pretty good job with some of their Christmas music. And you tell me that you're going across the way to the Sphere.
Yep.
Backstreet Boys!
Yep, yeah! I'll be there. I'm going with my wife. The big Christmas gift was that. And
Look at you.
And, look, I mean.
Happy wife, happy life. Take her to Backstreet Boys. And deep down, you know you love the Backstreet Boys, too.
Of course. Well, look, I'm in my early 30s, of course. I mean, that's them and NSYNC. That was the jam in the late 90s, early 2000s now.
I was watching, I crap you not, I was watching a Backstreet Boys, I forget what song it was. It must have been a recent Christmas video they did. And Nick Carter, right?
Yeah.
Had on a Backstreet Boys jacket, and they have a logo. It's like a B and a B. Like, yeah. And I was like, I said to the SO, significant other, I was like, would it be okay for a 55-year-old to wear a Backstreet Boys jacket and just look like a complete horse's ass? I'm like, I like that logo. It has nothing to do with my life, and I wouldn't be confused. You know.
The answer is yes, by the way.
I don't know. I think I might be beyond the age. Well, that'll be cool, though. At the Sphere, too.
First concert I've seen there, so super excited for that.
This is great.
Yeah.
Man, big weekend on the way. Well, like I said, I'm going to gorge tonight, wake up fat and happy, do Throw the Flag tomorrow. Thanks to Mr. Ruffin for hosting the show here at Treasure Island. Thanks to Jeff and Mateo and all the great guests on today. Appreciate the folks at Nebraska hooking us up with Matt Rule, LVBowl.com. LVBowl.com is where you get your tickets for what I think is going to be a really good game and a very, like, intriguing game from a storyline standpoint now that Kyle Whittingham, on his way out, is going to be taking the Michigan job. It's pretty incredible stuff. We'll see you tomorrow, 9 a.m. right here at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. Come on down. Watch the game.